Do you, Chris, take this woman to be your lawfully wedded wife? Do you promise to barrage her with obscure facts concerning comics, movies, TV shows, and toys?
I do.
And Cindy, do you take this man-child to be your lawfully wedded husband? Do you promise to humor him by engaging him in his obsessive ramblings, for better or worse, in pre-crisis or in post?
Sure, why not?
Then by the power invested in me by the High Father of the Fourth World, I now pronounce you Supermates. You may podcast with the bride.
Welcome to episode 13 of Supermates, the Husband and Wife Geekcast. I'm Chris Franklin.
And I'm Cindy.
And today's episode is going to be a little bit different. It's going to be more off the cuff than usual. We don't have a lot of lengthy notes. It's just kind of going to be a general discussion of the state of the union of comic book movies, more or less.
Now, Christopher does have 7 pages. So, you know, it's like half what we usually have.
Yeah, but 6 of those pages are feedback.
Well, I know,
and we're
going
to go over feedback. I was going to get to that part. We're going to go over feedback. And then at the end of the show, we're going to discuss what we're going to be doing up next on the show. But we won't get into that yet. We'll leave you hanging on that one. So, we, like just about everybody else by the time, especially by the time you hear this, we have seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
Twice.
We went and saw this twice. And this is a big deal for us to take the whole family back to the movies again. That's a huge deal.
Oh, yeah.
We don't do that very often at all. A lot of times we talk about, I'd really like to see that again.
But we actually did it. I mean, it is a really good movie. Good storyline, good actors, great. I mean, the soundtrack is wonderful.
Yeah.
We actually even bought the soundtrack already.
Yeah, we've been wearing it out. You know, when your 6-year-old daughter's singing "Cherry Bomb," that's pretty wild.
No, I'll keep waiting for her teacher to say something about it.
Yeah, you know, she's doing the Runaways, but I think the thing, you know, of course, the movie's done phenomenally well, and you know, this is a property that I think even old comic fans like me, you know, we knew the Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm more familiar with the old version that had, you know, Charlie 27 and Martin X and Yondu, who is in the movie, and those guys, Vance Astro. But, you know, when they announced this film as part of the Marvel Universe series, I'm like, really? Really? And then I'm like, okay, they've been doing something different with them in the comics. There's Rocket Raccoon, I know who that is. Star-Lord, I kind of knew who that was. And Gamora and Drax, I knew from the old Warlock books. But I'm like, that's, you know, really? That, I was like, oh man, I don't know about this one. This might be Marvel's first dud. And boy, was I wrong.
Yeah. I remember us talking about that. I'm like, who is that? This isn't any known property. I mean, not widely known, let's put it that way, you know?
Right, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, nobody knew who Iron Man was, but I think people, you know, Iron Man had some media exposure. He was part of the 60s cartoon, Marvel Superheroes cartoon. He had a 90s cartoon series. He guest starred on other cartoons.
Right.
You know, there'd been toys. He had a presence. It wasn't a huge one outside comics, but, and of course that blew up and became huge and kicked off the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think one thing about Guardians that our son Andrew brought up was, you know, you didn't have any
preconceived notions.
Right. It didn't have to live up to expectations.
Right. You didn't have to say, oh, I hope they're a good steward of the character that I've grown up with and loved. You just kind of went in there and you're like, this was your introduction to them. And so you didn't feel like, oh, well, I hope they do this part, or I hope they don't do that to it. Da, da, da. You just went in and you enjoyed it.
Right. And even if you, you know, even if you were a fan of the current comic incarnation, you still could kind of say, well, this isn't Captain America. This isn't Thor. You know, if they change it up a little bit, it's not that big of a deal. It just doesn't have that weight of that history and that importance in the Marvel Universe. Like, you know, my whole thing with before the release of Captain America, the First Avenger, was if they don't, this will all fall apart if they don't get Captain America right.
Right.
Because
he's the linchpin.
And I'm a huge Cap fan. He's my favorite Marvel character. Him and Spider-Man go back and forth. But you know, everybody loves Spider-Man. Of my personal picks, Cap's the guy. You know, if they didn't get him right, it was going to fall apart. I didn't feel that way going here. I was like, when I saw the first trailer, I'm like, okay, they sold me. This looks fun.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the big things, is just how fun this movie is. And without getting into spoilers, you know, there's parts of it that are really just heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, you quickly, you know, get into the fun aspects of it. And that's what I really enjoyed about it. It's just a fun time at the movies. It's a science fiction movie that's maybe a bit more science fantasy than science fiction, I guess. It's kind of, you know, it's got a lot in common with Star Wars. A lot of people are saying, you know, this maybe not have such a huge impact, but this could be this generation's Star Wars type of film. And it does have that feel, you know, about it. And, you know, a little bit of Flash Gordon with the rock and the pop aspect to it, which I like. I think the thing that it's not doom and gloom. It's not, you know, downbeat science fiction. It's fun. It's just a really good time. And it's very witty, very well written.
That is the one thing, you know, and I mean, we made this decision together to take, you know, Danny, but there are a couple of swear words in it, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but you kind of know that going in, I guess, that there's going to be some. Yeah, it's a little more like they're repeated. It's like they're part of a punchline. It's like it's not just a passing thing here and
right.
there. So, yeah, there are a few words here and there, but, you know, overall, I mean, it's just great. I can't wait to see what they do next. And, you know, one thing I really enjoyed about it, and kind of what we're bringing up here, and the tone of the movie was this lighthearted, you know, just fun romp through space. I mean, yes, the situation was dire, and the villain was bad, and he was portrayed well, and he really wanted to see him get it, but the characters were so likable, and their situation, you know, their reactions to their situation was, you know, felt real. You know, you felt like, okay, this is, it was fun. It was never a farce, you
right,
know, I mean,
right.
But that's one thing I really liked, because the tone of this was its own. It wasn't like, you know, Captain America, the Winter Soldier, which preceded this, while still had fun elements and good dialogue and stuff, it was a, you know, a heavier film, because it was dealing with some real world elements and heavier ideas and things like that. And it had a different flavor from Captain America, the First Avenger.
Right.
And so what I'm trying to get at here is, these movies, even though they exist in the same universe and there's connections to all the different films that are under the control of Marvel Studios themselves, they let each film have its own personality.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I know one complaint about Man of Steel last year and all these, you know, DC films going forward is, you know, can we please not have them feel like a Nolan Batman movie?
Right. I mean, they're giving every character the Batman treatment, and that's the whole point. All characters are not Batman. They right. have their own personality.
Right. And, you know, and I liked Man of Steel. I enjoyed it. Some people hate it. Some fan, diehard fans just vehemently hate it. I will say, you know, as time has worn on, we're a year past it coming out. You know, I do question more some of the directions that they, you know, went with it. And did it have to be that somber? Couldn't they have injected a little more joy into it, you know? I think part of the reason they didn't, some of the things that fans don't like about Man of Steel come as a direct result of the kind of reaction to Superman Returns. Because you had a movie that was a sequel to the Richard Donner, Christopher Reeve era movies.
Right.
And so, you know, they didn't. So, you know, going forward, the movie didn't perform the way they wanted Superman Returns. So, like, okay, we're not going to do that anymore. We got to do something different than those movies. That time has passed. We're moving on. So your tone's going to change. The complaint about Superman Returns is, I just want to see him punch something. You know, I want to see him fight. I want to see him throw down with somebody. So you get this giant battle.
Long, drawn out.
Massive destruction battle, which, you know, a lot of people took issue with. And it is rather excessive. And, you know, why is Superman not stopping this and taking this fight away? Although in the movie maker's defense, he tries to and he comes back. But, you know, they end up fighting in Metropolis again. But Nolan was a producer on that one. You know, this Superman, Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice movie, like we talked about in the last episode, the teaser shown at San Diego, again, looks dark. They're the scenes aping The Dark Knight Returns. So, of course, it looks dark. But, you know, I hope that the success of this will maybe at least make them think that, okay, moving forward, not all these movies have to feel the same. We can inject some humor. We can inject some lighter moments. Mm-hmm.
We can give them better titles.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, some people really like, I don't have a problem with the title. I mean,
I do. It's stupid and clunky.
Well, what would you call it?
Anything else.
I mean, they're setting up the Justice League movie, so.
I know, but Superman v. Batman, I mean, come on.
The V part is
pretentious, yeah, I think. It's pretentious and stupid, and I'm like, what is it, a Roman numeral 5? Come on, just go ahead and say verses. Get over it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of silly. It's like, you know, like I said, it's like the legal battle, you know, Batman serves Superman with papers, and I haven't been paying a lot of attention. There's pictures of Ben Affleck, and he's in Detroit filming as Bruce Wayne, and Gal Gadot's on, you know, in civilian clothes, and now Amy Adams. And I've tried not to pay a whole lot of attention, but you can't help but see them as you, like,
scroll through
SupermanHomepage.com, which is cool, the Superman website to go to. But, you know, you scroll through and you see them, but I'm trying not to, you know, read too much because I don't want to know what happens. I get the general idea that, you know, Bruce Wayne's involved in the rebuilding of Metropolis. I think everybody pretty much guessed that anyway. And so, you know, that is kind of neat that maybe when they had all this destruction, they were going to address this, you know, it bring Batman in this way. Maybe the reaction of fans to all the destruction was, okay, well, you got a point. Let's address it. I don't know, but it's good that they're kind of addressing it, you know, rather than just leaving it lying, but still kind of paint Superman out to be a
douche.
Yeah, basically. But, you know, it's really strange to stop and think as a longtime geek how things have totally flip-flopped. In the movies, comics to movie arena, because back in the late 80s, you couldn't sneak a Marvel movie into a theater. I guess the Punisher, did the Punisher get the Dolph Lundgren Punisher? I guess it got theatrically released. I off the top of my head, I don't even know, but if it did, it didn't do anything, you know, And, you know, Howard the Duck, of course, came out. That was actually the first Marvel movie in a theater, if you don't count the Captain America movie serials from the 40s. You know, and of course, it had a big budget. George Lucas was behind it, and it, you know, tanked. because it's just an odd film. We recently watched that. Me and the kids recently watched that. I forgot how racy and inappropriate that movie is for kids in spots. I mean, of course, you know, a lot of movies back then that seemed like they were partially aimed at kids were full of things that, you know, you wouldn't see in a movie aimed at kids now, including one that we'll be talking about in a month or so. But anyway.
Don't spoil it.
I'm not going to. Wolfman's got nards. But anyway. But anyway.
My name is Horace.
But the Captain America movie from the late 80s, early 90s, you know, Comic Scene magazine kept, you know, saying, this is going to be awesome. This is it. This is where Marvel superheroes enter into the theater, you know, and, you know, Batman had come out and taken the world by storm. You had the Superman movies, even though the last one, Superman 3, performed well. You can say what you want about it, but Superman 3 made money. It was successful. Supergirl and Superman 4 tanked, but Superman 3 made money. But anyway, just putting it out there. I know it's not a great movie. It's got some great parts overall, misfire, but it still made money. But anyway, so then you had Batman come out, and of course Batman just blew up and exploded and was humongous. And, you know, Marvel couldn't, the Captain America movie never made it to theaters. The Spider-Man movie that they talked about never got off the ground. And, you know, they had, of course, they were all Batman movies, but you had this succession of Batman movies coming out, and you couldn't get, no matter how many times Stan hyped it in interviews and this and that, none of these movies ever made it into a theater. The Fantastic Four movie, which we've talked about before,
right,
never even was released at all. You know, of course, that's a whole other matter. Blade came out, but, you know, Blade, did that really count? I mean, that was kind of like Swamp Thing.
It was off to itself.
It's like a periphery. It was more of a horror film than a, you know.
There was three of those or four of those?
There was three and then a TV movie that they spun into a series with a different actor.
Uh-huh.
And so kind of, you know, in a way, kind of similar because Swamp Thing had two movies, a live action series and a cartoon. So kind of, they were kind of even in a way. But then when X-Men came out, that was really the start of this new renaissance of comic book movies. And that did well. And then Spider-Man hit. And then, you know, and of course, Batman was radioactive after Batman and Robin. And they let the stink die off until
wow.
Cool party. But
anyway,
the chilling sound of your doom and all that. But anyway. So, you know, and that got the ball rolling with Marvel. You know, DC, Warner Brothers tried to get a Superman movie off the ground. You know, we all know about the 90s aborted Nicolas Cage, Tim Burton nightmare.
I'm so glad that did not get made.
Yeah, there's actually a documentary coming out about that. It was Kickstarter funded. I think it's called The Death of Superman Lives or something like that. It's about what happened.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, Nicolas Cage, do not get me wrong, great actor. I enjoy him in most movies. That was not one of them.
Right. Yeah. He is a great actor. Sometimes he does not, I think he's much like Ben Affleck, but even more so because he's been at it longer, does not always pick the best roles.
No.
You know, but, he was really good as the twisted Adam West type crime fighter in Kick-Ass.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was like dead on. It was crazy.
Some point, we need to watch the follow-up to that when the kids are well asleep and, you know.
Yeah.
It is not one to watch. Now, that there is no question. You do not know.
No. Can't even talk about it.
No.
But anyway, you know, X-Men comes out. They're still trying to get another Superman movie off the ground. They finally, you know, they get Nolan in on Batman. And of course, you know, Batman Begins does well, not huge, but does really well when released on home video. And of course, they're going to do a sequel. And we all know what happened after that because, you know, Dark Knight went nuts and made, you know, $1 billion. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, Marvel's getting the ball rolling with these movies they farmed out to Fox, and X-Men movies continue to do well. Daredevil, not so much. Did okay. But, I mean, you know, you know, it's just DC tries to get other movies going. Superman Returns actually, you know, made a profit, but apparently didn't do what they wanted. And it's just, it's really just strange to see how just the fortunes changed. And, uh-huh. and then, you know, it's weird to think all these years DC was attached to Warners. I mean, they've been attached to one another because basically they were bought out by the same company in and around the late 60s. DC was bought in the late 60s, Warner's late 60s, early 70s. I don't have it in front of me, but like Kenny Services or something. It was a company that like owned like funeral homes and parking lots. I mean, it's just like this strange, yeah, and they bought up, you know, they bought DC, they ended up buying Warner Brothers, and, you know, they owned both of them, so DC was attached to this movie studio all these years, and all they could ever successfully get off the ground were Superman and Batman movies. And now, you know, Marvel, who, you know, couldn't, they were attached a few times to different studios, but very small ones, like the New World Television or something like that at one time in the late 80s, early 90s, and they couldn't get anything done. Then all of a sudden, success they've had with these Spider-Man and X-Men, they get Marvel Studios going, and they get a deal with Paramount, and they're starting to put out, they're in control of their characters, you know, you get Iron Man in the second Hulk movie, the good one, and you know, they start building this universe just much like the comics did with the Marvel comics. You know, it really is unprecedented in movies unless you count the Universal Monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Because they brought all that together in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, and then the House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula, Adam Costello Meet Frankenstein, the Monster Rally movies. You know, integrated all these stories together. I mean, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman was a sequel to The Wolfman and Ghost of Frankenstein, mm-hmm. directly a sequel to those two movies. And so, you know, you're getting that kind of thing now, you know, where the Avengers is a sequel to, you know, Captain America, First Avenger, and Thor, and Iron Man, and, you know. And so it's, you know, it's what we're, us comic fans are used to. But, you know, and of course now DC's, you know, Warner Brothers, they're in a very strange position where they, you know, the fans want that type of thing from them, but at the same time, if they do it exactly like they did, then they're just going to see, oh, they're ripping them off, mm-hmm. you know. So that's why, you know, apparently you're going to get these cameos of, or some, who knows, maybe more than a cameo, but you're going to get Wonder Woman, you're going to get Aquaman, you're going to get Cyborg in some fashion in this Batman v Superman movie. And they're going to kind of go on a different tangent with it and then jump straight into a Justice League and, I guess, hope for
the best.
And actually, you know, after Guardians took off, like within just a few days, DC moved Batman v Superman from its original May 6, 2016 date. When they picked that date, that was the date that Marvel had penciled in for Captain America 3. And it basically, it was like, okay, who's going to blink? Who's going to...
Yeah, kind of like a game of chicken.
They're playing chicken, exactly.
And DC is the one that blinked because they moved.
DC blinked. And you got a question, okay, was it because such an unknown property like Guardians opened the way it did? Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But it sure seemed weird that they did it right around that time. Yeah. But they did announce this, you know, these dates they had for untitled DC films. So in 2016, you've got March 25th, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. August 5th, untitled DC film. So later in the summer, you're going to get another DC film. 2017, you got June 23rd and November 17th, two untitled DC films. 2018, you got three films in March, July, and November. 2019, you got two films in April and June. 2020, you got three, April, June, and November again. So, I mean, they're... You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, this is BS. They're just putting this out to save face, or they're just throwing dates out so nobody will, you
take
know,
those.
Take
yeah.
those. But who knows? I mean, we don't know what they're doing. But at least, you know, I guess they at least look like they got a plan, you know. And I hope they do have a plan. And I hope it, I hope they, I, you know, I hope they listen to the fans. I mean, you're not going to please everybody.
No.
But I hope they just let the material speak for itself. You know, they take what's there in the comics. You know, I know they got to reinterpret it. There's different versions. I mean, obviously, the Marvel movies, it's not completely the classic original Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, whoever right. versions. There's a little bit of the Ultimate version mixed in. Mm-hmm. There's other writers and artists' interpretations over the years. But for the most part, I think everybody will agree that they're pretty satisfying versions. They've really done a good job of kind of condensing everything down into the movie versions of the characters.
I have said this, I don't know how many times, and this is true. Give them to Bruce Timm. Let him do them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's, I mean...
Well, really, too, you know, if you stop and think about it, if somebody at Warner Brothers had just said years ago, you know, you guys, the Bruce Timm... Mm. And, you know, and people have asked Bruce Timm, would you be interested in doing live action? And he said, oh, yeah, you know, but I just don't think I'll ever get the opportunity. But if somebody had said to him, you know what, you do a bang-up job with this. Why don't you just, you know, do a movie?
Right.
And, you know, look at Brad Bird from, you know, from animation. I mean, you know, that did The Iron Giant and The Incredibles. He's gone on to do live action films that have done extremely well. If he could do it, why not court that guy? And two, you know, Bruce Timm himself, I mean, give him a shot, you know, just, I mean,
maybe not even as the director, but let him write the scripts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Bring in his crew to work on, or, you know, if nothing else is just, you know, to be in the brain trust of it.
The consultant or, yeah. you know, something.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know.
I mean, like, I'm the cheerleader captain for Bruce Timm. I mean, I've been accused of that when we've talked to other friends and stuff like that, but I defend my position. Bruce Timm is my version of the DC universe, the end.
Well, and in a way, what they did in the animated series, and especially when they got into doing Superman and Justice League, is, you know, they essentially did what Marvel Studios has done.
That's what I'm talking about. They took the best elements, and that's what made me think of that comment.
Right.
You know, Bruce Timm, like Marvel has done, took the best elements of this and made a wonderful amalgam.
Right. Without doing amalgam, because that'd just be weird if they did amalgam. I'd go see a super soldier movie.
I would go see an Amazon movie.
I don't know if Halle Berry's in it. I don't know.
Well, this is true.
As Storm. Ooh. She wasn't so... You didn't get to see the last one. She wasn't so bad in the last one. As long as she doesn't say that stupid line. It's like, you know what happens to a toad in the lightning
storm? Oh, yeah.
Same thing as everything else. Or whatever. That's like the worst line in like cinema history, I think. I mean, it's just just awful. Of course, she's great in other things, but I don't know.
Not so much.
Not so much, but yeah. So... If you haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, go out and see it. It's a great movie. It's a great ride. You know, it was really funny because I was talking to a guy at work, and he always, you know, he's not really a closet comic fan.
He doesn't wear it on his sleeve.
He doesn't wear it on his sleeve, but he always comes up. So did you see it? What you hear? Hear anything lately? But he'd come up to me, you know, after Guardians on that Monday, the first time I saw it. He said, "Did you see it?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, it was awesome. We were talking about it." And this lady that works there at work, and, you know, she's, you know, I never would have ever thought about her being interested in any of this stuff. You know, she's probably in her late 40s, early 50s or something like that. She's like, "Oh, are you talking about Guardians of the Galaxy? I love that movie. Oh, it was great." And we just started talking about it. I'm just like, I can't believe I'm having this conversation. This is the world we live in. You know, and I want to say this too, you know. There's some people, and I've heard this, and I just kind of scratched my head. Me and Andrew Leyland were talking about this off air one day when he was a guest on the show. There's some people that really just seem to have a problem with the uninitiated liking these movies, becoming fans of these characters, because, you know, you don't have 40 long boxes in your basement, then you can't go see these movies. Well, bullshit. Just say it right there. You know what? The more the merrier. You know, I mean, it's, you know, everybody's got, like, I know there's people that know a whole lot more about comics history and things than I do. I know more about it than some people do. And you know what? If this gets people interested in it, and if they go into a comic shop, or you know, they look online, they order from Amazon, if they order a Guardians of the Galaxy book and they like it, or whatever, or if they never do, but they're like, oh, I can't wait to see the next movie. If they just get into the movies, who cares? You know, you can be a James Bond fan and never have cracked open an Ian Fleming book. So what's the difference? You know, I mean, to me, that's just, I can't get behind that way of thinking. I can't support it. And when I hear people do that, I'm like, this is the reason why, you know, comic fans, you know, like the stereotype of the comic book guy from The Simpsons, that elitist snob, you know, that's like, well, no wonder nobody wants anything to do with you, you know. And I just can't go for that. So, you know, if you like it, man, go for it. So enjoy it. So we're going to take a break, and we'll come back and we'll read your emails and comments on previous episodes.
The dawn of an age. The founding of a family.
You know we haven't done enough research into the effects of cosmic rays.
You've got to take that chance.
Conditions are right tonight. Let's go.
They're penetrating the ship. Our shielding isn't strong enough.
I feel like I'm burning up.
Too heavy. Can't move.
Too heavy.
We're all alive.
I feel so strange.
You're fading away. I can't see you at all anymore.
Look what's happening to you. You're changing.
Oh, Reed, not you too.
What happened to me? To all of us?
I can fly.
We gotta use that power to help mankind, right?
And so was born the Fantastic Four.
For soon the Mole Man will have the entire world in his power.
I am the mightiest living mortal on Earth. And half mankind shall feel that might.
The Fantastic Four. Little do they dream they're the palms in the hands of Dr. Doom.
Human Torch will be the Puppet Master's next victim.
You Earthlings can't change the way I can. That means I'm the most powerful person on Earth.
I've been expecting you, for I am the Thinker.
I vow never to return, my lord, until the Fantastic Four are no more and the planet Earth is no more.
You're in the presence of the awesome Ralatots, King of Kings, Master of Men, and Lord of the Seven Suns.
Fool, you're just a muscular freak. Blind the Hulk.
Stop! You must not enter the castle of Diablo.
My journey has ended. This planet shall sustain me until it has been drained of all elemental life. So speak, Galactus.
Flame on!
It's clobbering time!
The Fantastic Four from the very beginning. Witness the origins of a legend. The Fantasticast. ffcast.libsyn.com.
And we're back. And so now we're going to get into the old Supermates mailbag. I wish I had come up with some kind of thing for this because, you know, like I said, I think I said in the last one, Shag does on the Fire and Water podcast, it goes, listener feedback. And then on the Fantastic Cast, Andrew Leyland and Steve.
Sounds like random dancing off iCarly.
Good Lord.
I'm sorry.
But Andrew Leyland and Stephen Lacey on the Fantastic Cast, they actually had Michael Bailey go, it's clobbering time, and they or it's email reading time, that's what it is. And they have him, they mess with his voice, so he sounds like the thing, which is cool. But we don't have anything fancy for that, so maybe,
here we go.
You know, maybe we could get Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood Speedy Delivery or whatever. I don't know. But anyway.
He's dead.
He's dead. Oh, well, that's... I don't think... Well, never mind. Okay. We got a comment on our Facebook page from Martin Gray, and he wrote, well, thanks to Rob Kelly, you had a new listener for this episode. And thanks to yourselves, you have a new subscriber. I really enjoyed this episode and will be playing catch-up with previous installments. I love those Alan Brennert stories. They were truly head and shoulders above anything else back then. They are pretty much better than anything now. Did you ever see his few Daredevil stories? Brennert didn't click quite so well with Marvel. Interrupting here real quick. I have not read his Marvel stuff, but Rob Kelly over at the Fire and Water podcast actually did an interview with Alan Brennert. That's where they actually talk about all his comic work That's went up since our Alan Brenner episode. If you haven't listened to that, go listen to it. After you're done listening to this, of course. But go listen to it. Rob did a great job. It's a great conversation between those two. And they talk about the Marvel stories in addition to the Batman stories we talked about and all his other work. And Martin continues, Cindy, you read at least one DC growing up, as you mentioned Amethyst among your Marvels. Probably it was a slip of the tongue and you realized this later. I once had a letter in Amethyst. Thrillingly. Chris, I cannot believe you didn't love the cover for the autobiography of Bruce Wayne. I'm not really an Apero fan. Well, I like his Aquaman, but not so much as Batman. I think it was the mask eyeballs, but I adored that Brave and Bold cover, especially the capes. The heart motif suited the dreamy mood. I love Apero. I think I said Apero, so sorry about that. That's how I used to pronounce it when I was a kid. So it comes back sometimes. I love Apero. I mean, he's like one of my favorite Batman artists of all time and just one of my favorite comic artists, period. But that cover was just a little too, I mean, I guess it's because the way it made me feel. I was at that age when I bought it that I was just like, ugh. It's making
girls have cooties.
It's making a heart. You know, it's just like, ugh. So I guess it stuck with me. So sorry. And then Martin writes, any chance of dropping the music from behind the recaps? I find it more distracting than enriching. Probably not, because I like it. But to be honest, that's something I have kind of tried to you know, I try to listen to it and make sure it doesn't overpower what we're reading, our vocals. But you know, it's pretty common on shows that do that, and I really do think it kind of helps the mood and kind of gets you in the frame of mind of you know, especially if you. It's linked to a TV adaptation of the character you're talking about or something like that. So, you know, maybe sometimes we went, you know, we're still learning. It's still new to us. Maybe we've went a little overboard with the music, but we'll try to keep it, you know, we'll try to be mindful of not overdoing it, but it's probably going to stay. Okay. So now we'll move on to our first email from Gene Hendricks of the Hammer Podcast. So you want to take this one?
Okay. Chris and Cindy, I just made it through all of your episodes. It's a thing I do. And I wanted to say, great job. Thank you very much. I like the catch-all nature of the show, and I'm having fun listening. As my wife is also of the geeky persuasion, it's nice to hear that we're not the only couple that discusses these kinds of topics. Superman versus Batman, Star Trek versus Next Generation, it's very much like some of our discussions. Also, rest assured, if I ever visited that museum, I'd be reciting... You don't want me to sing the theme to the Super Friends 2. Keep up the great work. Gene also has websites and podcasts of his own. The Hammer Strikes at www.thehammerstrikes.com. He also hosts two podcasts on the Two True Freaks Network.
Yes, which are very good. I listen to them regularly, and if you haven't checked those out, please do. And Gene has, as part of the Hammer Podcast... on the Two True Freaks Network. He has episodes in the feed occasionally that are called Legends of the Superheroes, and they are about the live-action interpretations of comic book characters, and I really, really enjoy those. He's had several really great episodes on that, so definitely check those out if you haven't. So we got another message from Martin Gray. This one is about the Spider-Man live-action pilot that we talked about that had Andrew Leyland as our guest. Andrew Leyland, of course, of Hey Kids Comics, Fantastic Cast, and The Palace of Glittering Delights. So Martin writes, another fun episode. I only watched a couple of episodes of Spider-Man as it was such cheap rubbish. Now, Andrew is obviously a mere child, or he'd remember that the Electric Company was indeed on UK TV in the 70s, run by the BBC in the early afternoon. I don't recall ever seeing Spider-Man on it, though. And so I commented back to this was on our, actually on our Facebook page. So I commented back to Martin and I said, I believe Spidey was added to the Electric Company a few seasons in. So maybe you got only the earliest episodes. And Andy actually wrote in and said, I never knew the Electric Company stuff was shown in the UK. And Martin wrote back and said, I'm old, you know, but... So I wrote back and said, just like the Electric Company, this podcast and its listeners can be very educational. So that was a cool little exchange there. So there you go. So the Electric Company apparently was on in the UK, and Andy was wrong. So just remember that. Andy was wrong.
Aw, but he agreed with me, so it's all good.
Yeah, you two. Yeah, we'll get into that in a minute. You two really tore that one a new hole, man.
See?
So, Gene of the Hammer podcast and other fine shows wrote back, Gene Hendricks, and he wrote concerning that. This was on Facebook, too. Mm. Wow, was the Spider-Man show really that bad? I remember it being great. But I also haven't seen it in 25 plus years, so nostalgia might be coloring my memories.
Oh, honey, yes it is.
Well, he followed up on that and wrote again and said, rewatching this right now. The let's watch Peter change clothes scene. The running from the slow-moving car scene. The let's recap everything we've seen so far while Peter sleeps scene. What's not to like? So, there you go. So, we got a message from Rob Kelly of the Aquaman Shrine, Firewater Podcast, and Hey Kids Comics book, and all other sorts of great things, and our pal, so why don't you read that one?
Okay. Thoroughly enjoyed this episode, as I do all of them, but I felt that Cindy was a little harsh on the Spidey show. Excuse me, Andrew Leyland was right there in with me, just bashing right along with me. That was not just a Cindy show. Sure, it's pretty lame, but I felt that they were trying to do something cool, but they just liked the money. Maybe the CBS Doctor Strange movie will be more to her liking. Honey, there is not enough vodka in the world for make me watch that.
I haven't seen that in years. I think I only saw that once, and I didn't even know it existed. And I came home. I'd been running around with my buddies. I was probably like 10 or 11 or something like that. It was on in the afternoon on like Channel 19 out of Cincinnati. You know, they'd show movies in the afternoon on Saturdays. I think I even looked it up in the TV guide or something, and it said, that's Doctor Strange, and I, like, flipped it over, and it was some dude with a perm, but it actually wasn't bad. I mean, for TV, 70s, it wasn't bad, so, you know, your mileage may vary. I haven't seen it since then, so I might think, now, good Lord, it was horrible, but at the time, I thought it was okay. So, it's got another one from about the Spider-Man episode, and this one actually just came in just a few days ago. I put it in here with this batch. So this is from Derek Crabb. And Derek actually, he sends us a link for something that's really cool, and we'll get into that at the end. He said, all the cross-promotion is paying off. I listened to Andrew before via Views from the Long Box and started listening to the Supermates podcast via the Rob Kelly, Alan Brennard episode. After that, I checked out a few episodes of Hey Kids Comics. While we don't have the same sources for the Amazing Spider-Man TV series, we did come to similar conclusions and findings. Thought Chris and Andrew might get a kick out of this. Maybe Cindy can't relive the horror.
Daggum straight there, buddy.
And he sends us a link to, he's got a blog. I mean, it's a video podcast, and it's located at hocof.blogspot.com. And that's stands for History of Comics on Film. And the Spider-Man one is episode 50, part 50, which I checked that out, and it's a really fun overview of the series. It's got some clever edits in it, little bits in there that he threw together that had me laughing. It's really fun. If you're interested in the Spider-Man series, I'd check it out. He kind of comes to the same conclusion we did with it, but he has a lot of fun with it. It's definitely worth checking out. Also, thanks for mentioning Age of TV Heroes. Still haven't got my hard copy in the mail, come to think of it, but the PDF, is full of the same information with immediate gratification. Take care and keep up the good work, Derek. Yeah, that Age of TV Heroes book is just, it's great. I recommend it to anybody. If you got any interest in the TV adaptations of comic book heroes, that's the book to get. It's got everybody in it, so... So Derek, as I said, his website is hocof.blogspot.com, and he's also part of a podcast. I haven't listened to this one yet, but I just love the name, Fan Holes Podcast. I haven't had a chance to check that one out yet. So that's www.fanholespodcast.blogspot.com. We got another one from Gene Hendricks, another comments. I think this one was an email, and it was called Alternate Reality Superheroes. You want to take this one?
Okay. Chris and Cindy, another great episode. I'm a sucker for alternate takes on superheroes, like Elseworlds or What If. Me too. So these two episodes on the Justice League were great. I didn't remember the Super Friends one until I saw the comic cover for this episode, then it all came flooding back. Obviously, as Chris said, that show doesn't hold up to a whole lot of scrutiny, but I remember that it blew my mind, as a kid, that there could be evil versions of the Super Friends. I wasn't reading comics at this point, so I didn't know about Earth-3 or the Crime Syndicate, So this was all high concept stuff to me. Now, it looks a little too outrageous, but since it was made for kids, I can understand why they went with the caricature evil versions. The Justice League two-parter, on the other hand, is still one of my favorites and lays the foundation for the Cadmus story arc later on, especially when the question loses it over Superman torching Luther. It also leads to one of my favorite lines for the series in that question episode, when Luther tells him, "Do you know how much power I'd have to give up to become president?" The Justice Lords do speak to how power can corrupt and how everyone needs to keep an eye on those with power to keep them in check, but also how little it can take, like in Brave New Metropolis, to push a good person over the edge. Not to being evil, but to try and control everything to the point that it becomes destructive.
Yeah, I agree. Those are the Justice League episode, really, the two-parter, really is a standout in that series. That's just full of great episodes. And that Brave New Metropolis episode, which we kind of briefly mentioned in the Justice Lords Super Friends episode, that's a great one too. The funny you mentioned that cover, because Rob Kelly again commented on Facebook for the cover I put together for our fake issue concerning the alternate realities. He said, "Where can I buy this?" And I actually wrote him back and said, "I know after I did this, I thought to myself, I would so buy this comic." It would be cool if they did something like that, but, you know. And that's one thing, I have fun doing those, you know. That's one way for me to, you know, have fun with my graphic design skills. So sometimes it's kind of a pain because I'm running out of time and I'll have to put one together. But it's fun to do. So we got another one from Rob on this one.
Fun fact, HB does not stand for Hanna-Barbera. Rather, it means Hail Beelzebub, reflecting the pro-satanic beliefs of the staff, which came out in this Super Friends episode. Aha.
Yeah. And I wrote back to Rob and said something like, any animation studio that would, you know, come up with Laverne and Shirley in the Army cartoon has got to be worshiping Satan. So, So there. So, Gene, I'm going to let you take this one from Gene.
Oh, okay.
Dean Hendricks again.
Thanks for the headache. Chris and Cindy. Yep, thinking about Donna Troy always gives me a headache. Like Batman and Green Lantern, the Teen Titans were exempt from the post-crisis reboot, and I think that was one of DC's greatest failings. Both then and now, they decided that some storyline creators were sacrosanct, and that means that the readers were left with a huge mess to deal with. I would have much preferred a clean reboot, which would have either wiped out Donna or changed her name until Wonder Woman showed up. Unfortunately, that was not to be. They kind of sort of make the best of it until John Byrne came in with the whole Dark Angel thing. Personally, I think he should have just left it as Hippolyta went back in time as Wonder Woman, and that's what inspired Donna Troy to take the name Wonder Girl, hindsight and all that. Keep up the great work, and thanks again for playing the Legends promo.
And you're more than welcome, Gene. We're glad to play it. And yeah, I this obviously was about our Donna Troy episode, which was our last episode. I kind of pretty much agree. The Titans was DC's biggest selling book, and I think that's probably Titans was probably one of the big reasons why DC didn't reboot from square one with the Crisis, you know. Because they would have had to send all those characters packing for at least a year or two and start introducing Robin and, you know, then eventually Wonder Girl and Kid Flash. And it would have been a while before you got the Cyborg and, you know, I mean, unless they just introduced them all at once, but that seemed kind of weird. So, and then of course, you know, yeah, the Dark Angel thing, they were all good attempts to try to patch the holes. But in the end, it was just like, you know, turning your car into Bondo.
I don't know if you can necessarily call them good attempts, but rather just attempts would be a better
description. Yeah, they were trying, but it ended up just making it worse, you know. But they were enjoyable in their own right here and there. So Martin Gray wrote us back again. I'm mid-listen and enjoying the Donna talk lots. I'd not heard that letter call doll explanation. How wacky. My Nubia got that as canon later. As regards the in-story explanation for the Impossible Tales, it was Hippolyta splicing together old home movies, obviously. So I wrote him back and, referred, as I forgot all about Nubia, Wonder Woman's, black sister from the 70s. She actually made it, she was, you know, presented as an enemy for Wonder Woman in the Mego line. They made her into a 12-inch doll. Mm-hmm. She's kind of, I guess, been forgotten more or less. And one thing I forgot initially in the episode and then initially in the show notes was to mention Tomorrow's Titans Companion, which that was really invaluable in doing the research on the Dawn episode, and I should have mentioned that in the show. That's by Glenn Cadogan, and there's two volumes of that. The first volume pertains more to the New Teen Titans and the original Teen Titans era. But both are great books. You really can't go wrong with any Tomorrow's Companion book if you're a fan of that particular character or series. But the Titans Companions are really well done and just full of great interviews and information. So if you're a Titans fan, definitely check those out. And Martin wrote back and said, actually, I've had that book for years, the Titans Companion. Must read it. And I wonder if Lilith is still riding around the U.S. meeting telepathic redheads and green plaid who aren't related to her. Cindy, thanks for wrecking Donna's story for me with your super logic. Brilliant. And actually, off air, Rob Kelly gave, me and Rob did a Power Records episode, which will probably already be up by the time this has aired, I think. Maybe, maybe not, but somewhere around in there. Probably around the same week as a Spider-Man-centric episode. But, Rob basically gave Cindy hell for screwing up the Donna story, too. So, it really is your mutant power. It's just, it's definitely it. Our final comment comes from our pal Andrew Leyland of the aforementioned Hey Kids Comics podcast and many other fine podcasts. Dearest Chris and Cindy, love the show, Steve. No, I do, really. Lovely to hear you two geek out. And your show is a favorite to listen to when it drops. Some thoughts on your most recent show. San Diego throws out a lot of information, most of which I simply couldn't keep up with, so I hadn't heard about either the Superman v. Batman trailer or The Rock is Shazam. That trailer sounds very DKR to me. The problem with that is, it isn't earned. When DKR first dropped, readers of the time had 40 years of Batman and Superman being buddies, so the fact that they had been... That there had been an event so traumatic it had tore their friendship apart was shocking. Now, nearly 30 years after DKR, it's slightly passé to portray Batman as the cool one and Superman as the douche, which is what you said earlier. Even Frank Miller has said that if he were writing a Superman story, that's not how he would have portrayed him. The flick still looks pretty interesting, though. However, The Rock is Shazam sounds perfect. Dwayne Johnson is as charismatic as all get out, and I want to be him when I grow up, so I'm sure a kid would want to. I'm also fine with calling him Shazam rather than Captain Marvel. After all, WB don't want to be plugging their competitors' movies. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, you're going to confuse people if you call him Captain Marvel. I understand that, but I still kind of hate it. But anyway, that's me, by the way. So Andy wrote, continued, who is Donna Troy's longtime favorite, as is the entire Teen Titans run? However, Cindy hit upon Wolfman's failings as a writer. His plotting is very weak. His characters and scripting are fine, as you pointed out in his detective work depictions. But plot-wise, he seems to decide the story he wants to tell, decide the outcome, and then fill in the blanks. The art in this issue is exemplary, though. Hearing you discuss Donna's wedding dress makes me want to hear you discuss famous comic book wedding issues. How about looking at FF Annual number 3, Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 21, Superman the Wedding Album, and Teen Titans number 50. Best, Andrew Leyland. Well, Andy, you know, you had a great idea there. So, me and Cindy talked about it, and we are actually going to cover that at some point.
Probably in June.
Yeah. You want to wait for June?
Wedding month. Unlike, I do have to tell this story.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, got to. Okay, when Chris and I got married, we did get married in January. We got married in between semesters. We were still in college at the time, so we got married in between the semesters. There was, and this happened probably about a year and a half ago. Keep in mind that Chris and I have been married almost 20 years now. And we were sitting on the couch, and a bridal show commercial came on. And Chris just looks up. He's sitting there reading a book. He's like, who on earth gets married in January? And I just looked at him and I just told him, we did, you moron. Not his his finest hour at all.
I think what I was trying to get at was most people don't get married in January, so why advertise for it? But it did come out wrong.
Yeah, backpedal and dig, buddy. Backpedal and dig.
But yeah, at some point down the line, we will definitely cover that. That is a great idea. Now, in his 50th episode, Trentus Magnus Punches Reality did cover the Donna Troy wedding, but that was as part of just celebrating kind of 50th anniversary milestones. So we'll probably, you know, by the time, not to step on his toes or anybody's toes, but by the time we get around to it, it'll been a while since it aired. But so I think that is a good idea. Plus,
but we call dibs. But that, to all you other people out there that's got your own podcast, we call dibs.
Yeah. As far as doing the wedding, and Andy came up with it, so and he told us we could do it.
Yeah, so we call dibs.
Yeah, so yeah, but yeah, there you go. So, you know, I mean, it'll be a nice sequel. Our very first episodes were about the famous married comic couples, and so that'll be a good sequel because most of them, you know, are mentioned here. I bet basically Aquaman and Mira and Hawkman and Hawkgirl were already married when they. The Silver Age version were already married when they showed up. So, but yeah, so that was a fantastic idea, and we are going to do that. So, thank you, Andy, for that suggestion, and thanks everybody for writing in. Please continue to do so. You know, our email is supermatespodcast@gmail.com, and you can go to Facebook and leave us a message there. Just look for Supermates. You can leave it on our blog page, our main page, and that is supermatescomic.blogspot.com. Let us know what you think. Got suggestions, things you like, things you don't like. Let us know. Going forward, the next few months, we have a very special series. Me and Cindy both love Halloween. Now, I know Halloween's like, by the time this airs, Halloween's still over. It's almost 2 months, well, it'll be more than 2 months away by the time this goes out. But, you know, you go into stores after the back-to-school stuff starts to die down. You start seeing Halloween stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it gets me in the mood. You know, I've already seen some. I love it. Love old horror movies. You know, when we started this show, we said we talked about classic horror. We haven't yet. We're going to make up for it. I'm just going to let the trailer do the talking. To take a listen to this.
On the grounds of Supermates Estates, there stands an ancient crumbling abode. This structure is said to contain unimaginable horrors, certain to chill your blood. Dare you enter the House of Frankenstein?
You're insane.
Don't tell me of it. I don't want to hear. I've changed my mind. I won't do it.
In September and October, join the Baron Frankenstein and his bride.
Woman. Freya. Yes. I want Freya.
For 4 bone-chilling episodes as they discuss some of your favorite classic horror films.
I am Dracula, and I welcome you to my house.
My name is Horan.
And resurrect and dissect some of the greatest monsters in cinema history.
There's an old poem. Even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by night
may become a wolf when the wolf bane blooms.
And the autumn moon is bright.
But don't fear, comic fans. This house is full of dusty long boxes containing your favorite superheroes' encounters with the supernatural.
Holy vampires, Batman! We're surrounded!
Your horror host will unravel a harrowing adventure each episode.
Now, Superman, you will feel the bite of Dracula.
This House of Horrors can be found at www.supermatescomic.blogspot.com or on iTunes by searching for Supermates.
Go quickly.
Yes. So, grab your crucifix and wolfsbane, light your candle, and explore the blood-soaked corridors of the House of Frankenstein will be expecting you.
I'm going now. And heaven help you.
Meeting adjourned.
So come back next time and we will open the doors to the House of Frankenstein. And like I said in the trailer, we will definitely still be talking about comic books with a horror tinge, your super favorite superheroes meeting monsters and the like, and definitely be talking about some great horror, classic horror films. I'm not going to exactly tell you what they are,
no.
but I guess we can tell them what the first one is, so they'll know. So the first one we're going to talk about is one that makes sense for a show called Supermates. It's The Bride of Frankenstein, the apex of all Universal movies, monster movies anyway. So
sounds like a plan.
Yep. So come back and we'll dish about The Bride of Frankenstein and a comic. And I think the one we're going to talk about, well, I don't want to say. Well, it'll be a surprise. We'll leave that part. We'll leave that part for a surprise. So thanks for listening. See you then. And bye.
Supermates is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises Worldwide. The fictional characters and events mentioned in this show are trademarked and copyright their respective owners. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their owners, and we mean no infringement by either. Thank you for listening to Supermates, the husband and wife geek cast.